You're listening to Messenger Insight, a news and information program brought to you by the Baptist Messenger and the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Messenger Insight. I'm Brian Hobbs, your host, joined with co-host Chris Doyle, and we have a very special guest today, Trevin Wax, who is Bible and Reference Publisher for Lifeway Christian Resources and Publisher for the Christian Standard Bible Translation. Trevin, welcome to Messenger Insight.
Good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you. And some people may be familiar with your popular blog, which appears on the Gospel Coalition, or familiar with your new book, This Is Our Time, Everyday Myths in Light of the Gospel, which we hope to talk about later in the interview. But I want to start out and talk about the Christian Standard Bible. Now, some people might be familiar with the Holman Christian Standard Bible, so I thought we could begin and talk about why did the Christian Standard Bible come about? Why was this update, and what's it all about?
Well, the Holman Christian Standard Bible was worked on in the 1990s, and it is a little bit unprecedented for a Bible's publisher to actually be part of the name of the translation. You know, so you generally don't see ZNIV for Zondervan's NIV or CESV for Crossway's English Standard Version or things like that, and so. The HCSB acronym had always been a little challenging, so that was one reason why people felt like it was, if we were going to be doing a revision, it would be a fine time to go ahead and simplify that name a little bit. And when it came to the revision process, it was really building on the good work of the HCSB team that had already really honed this philosophy of wanting to provide a translation that is accurate, close to the words of the original, and at the same time readable and very clear in contemporary English. So many times you feel like you have to choose between the two. The HCSB team wanted to really get in the sweet spot of accuracy and readability to really offer an optimal blend of that. And the CSB team, which was composed of scholars from different denominations, different geographical locations, continents where English is spoken, they came together with that same goal, and I think people will be pleased with the translation. If they're able to take a look, they'll find that it really is a fine translation that can be used for multiple purposes.
Trevin's Chris Doyle again. Thank you for being with us today. And you know, I actually got a copy of the study Bible, and I actually use it. And I know you're the editor of the Gospel Project, the Lifeway Sunday School Bible study material. I use that every Sunday, and I actually have used. In fact, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the study of Lazarus, mm-hmm. and found the study Bible to be very helpful. Just some extra little nuggets that help the lesson. But I wanted to ask you, who are the target readers, and what are they looking for in a Bible translation?
Yep, so the target readers for the CSB as a translation is really, you know, different people go to different translations for different purposes, right? So mm-hmm. you've got some people that will go to a more formal, a more literal word-for-word translation when they're doing, you know, really deep Bible study, and then you have others that will pick up, you know, a New Living Translation or a translation that is more very readable, at times leans over into interpretation perhaps more than other translations because they're wanting to clarify the meaning as much as they can, not just the words. And so people look to translations for different purposes. The target for the CSB is that pastor, that church leader, that Christian who wants a good primary Bible translation, one that they know is going to serve them well in multiple settings. So for the pastor who's doing Bible study and preaching and teaching, here is an accurate, literal translation that is great for use in Bible study and preaching. At the same time, it's also readable. It's one that you can pass out to even the kids in your congregation, and they're going to be able to follow along and understand very well, and it's not too wooden, and it's not it doesn't have archaic language. And so, you know, the target really is that group of people in the United States and around the world who love the Bible and want the best of multiple translation philosophies. They want a translation that's going to do things well. And that's really what we have found. People that have gravitated toward the CSB have told us that, they feel like it's taking the what they love most about a more literal translation and what they love most about a more dynamic translation, and it's put them together, and they get the best of both in one primary translation. It doesn't mean that they don't continue to consult other ones, but that they have found it to be a good text for multiple purposes.
Well, I think the people who worked on this project, of course, are very distinguished and respected scholars, did an excellent job getting at that balance of accuracy, literal, and then the readability. Something I noticed was this version, CSB, seemed to also get the high points, meaning verses that are familiar to just everyday people that may not know the Bible all that well. It was just really well done and well presented. If you had to make a comparison, I know this is hard, but compared to maybe the King James Version or the English Standard Version or a New Living, where would it fall closest to one of those other translations, just so people can begin to think about that and process?
That's a good question. On the spectrum from literal to more dynamic, of course, you have the King James and the ESV on the more literal side. You have the New Living Translation, you know, the Common English Bible. Those are on the more dynamic side. NIV, the 2011 version anyway, I would put on the more dynamic side. CSB is going to be in between an ESV and an NIV. It's going to be more literal than the NIV in most cases, and it's going to be more readable than the ESV in most cases. So it's kind of in between those two translations when it comes to its overall, you know, where it would land. Now, different passages are going to be different. You know, there are certain areas where it might skew more literal or might skew more dynamic. But on the whole, that's really, it's going to be in between those translations.
Well, Trevin, I know we've been talking it up. I know there's a lot of pastors, a lot of Southern Baptist leaders that have been talking it up and have been very pleased with their reading of the CSB. But if our listeners would like to read the CSB translation, where can they check it out?
I would recommend they go to csbible.com. That's the best place to go right away, because there's all sorts of different Bibles you can see there. You've got the text of there available. So csbible.com is the best place to go ahead and get an introduction to the translation. And if you're interested in some of the background information on different changes from the HCSB to the CSB, or why the committee or their philosophy of translation on certain things, that's a good place to find all of that information as well.
Very good. We'll encourage all of our listeners to do just that. And I know Chris mentioned the study Bible. I'd like to recommend that as well. It is excellent, chock full of content and just visuals that would enhance not only a Sunday school teacher or small group leader's dynamic teaching, but just their personal walk with Christ. Shifting gears a little, Trevin, let's talk about your new book, if we may. This Is Our Time, Everyday Myths in Light of the Gospel. It was a release this year, and people can check it out or search for it online. It's a B&H publishing book. Can you talk about why you wrote this book at this time?
You know, I was really burdened for a lot of people that I had come into contact with, just ordinary churchgoers who feel conflicted. They feel overwhelmed by the speed of cultural change that's going on. Just the rapidness of culture change can be somewhat disorienting, I think, to people. And so I had talked to a number of people who I could just sense that they want to be faithful. The desire is there to be faithful. They're not sure what faithfulness looks like in our day and age. And they need some help getting what I would call their gospel bearings. You know, the world is shaking, and we want to have a firm place to stand. And so we need gospel bearings. We need to make sure that our foundation is solid. And so what I wanted to do with the book was to say, okay, here are some different spheres of life in which let me show you what the world says, what the Bible says, and then what faithfulness might look like in these different spheres of life, everything from your use of the smartphone to your entertainment choices, to how you conceive of the purpose of life, to the way you spend money, your views of sex, of marriage, of politics, of power, things like that. I wanted to go through the different spheres of life and say, here are some of the myths you'll find in our world. Here's what Scripture teaches, and then here's how we can seek to be faithful to the Lord in this particular moment. And that was really the goal. I wrote it with just regular Christians in mind. It's not written for an academic audience. I hope it's robust and rich to read, but I wanted it to be very accessible and for people to be able to benefit from it and to feel like, okay, I can see now this is what faithfulness will look like, and to be excited at the faithfulness in our time.
Well, Trevin, I loved the book, and I love the intro. In fact, I'm not going to spoil it, but I love how you wrote your intro. You kind of had for our older listeners, you know, a Paul Harvey rest of the story type of element there. And I'm not going to give that away, but it talks about your experience in Romania, and you have family there. Tell me how an experience of being in another culture. How, you know, Christians, you know, in America, just, you know, there are challenges, and I think do you see that this book helps, you know, people see the different myths that you talk about, maybe from how we look at it as Americans as opposed to, you know, Christians in another country.
You know, one of the things that I have told people before when people have said, you know, what are the best ways at really understanding and seeing your own, really coming to understand the culture that you live in? And my answer to that seems a little strange, but I generally tell people the best way for you to see your culture is to get out of it, to go somewhere else for an extended period of time, and to see your world from the outside in is better than almost anything else that you could do. So for me, spending 5 years in Eastern Europe with little of American culture, Eastern Europe, Romania is really on that border between East and West, even as far as the different philosophical shifts between East and West would go. For me, that experience was invaluable. Of course, I'm married to a Romanian, so we carry over our in an international marriage. We have different elements, even in our home, how we live and things that are different. But I would say it's good to get out of your culture to be able to see it with fresh eyes. Now, I realize not everybody's called to go overseas or do cross-cultural ministry, and so that's not going to be practical for most people. So one of the things that I have felt passionate about is to say, okay, how can I take that experience of really analyzing and seeing the society, the world I grew up in, seeing that from the outside? How can I share some of those insights with as many people as possible so that the vast majority of people who are not going to ever leave their culture would still be able to see it with fresh eyes, maybe see it from a different angle and be able to wrestle with things, maybe that wrestle with questions they never even thought to ask before? Mm-hmm. Those are the things that really excite me as a writer, and that's what I was trying to do in This Is Our Time, is to really build on those experiences so that people would be better equipped to be faithful in a culture that they're called to reach.
Well, let's talk about maybe one of the topics in your book that is very relevant for today, especially for families. You know, you write that Hollywood and Bible are after the same thing, and that's an interesting way to phrase it. What is that shared goal that you present?
Well, Hollywood traffics in stories, and of course, the Bible tells the great true story of our world. Both Hollywood's stories and the true story of the Bible are going after the same thing. They're going after your heart. That's what a good story is trying to do. And so in talking about Hollywood and entertainment, I think it's important for us to recognize the power of stories, the pull of stories, how they work, not just on our minds, but also on our hearts, on our emotions, how they help us and make us see things a certain way. And some people will ask, well, is Hollywood an ally or is Hollywood an enemy when it comes to the gospel? And to that, I would have to say it is both, depending on the story. There are some stories that are allies to the gospel because they actually borrow some of the elements that are most moving, most inspirational from God's Word, from the gospel narrative itself, in order to make their own story. So sometimes you'll find these redemptive themes and parallels in Hollywood's movies and even in books and storytelling, even in video games and other things that are little echoes of the gospel. But then there's also Hollywood using its artistry to tell stories that are false, that lead to false understandings of the world, that actually, one example would be to flip the narrative to where sin is something freeing, and you're almost rooting for the main character to commit adultery, for example, or to fall into sin because it's seen as so enticing and freeing, or sometimes without consequences and things. And so, depending on the story, I think we'd have to say Hollywood sometimes can provide stories that that aid us as we're seeking to be faithful to the gospel, but many times Hollywood is also very much counter the true story of the world, and this goes from all kinds of movies, from G to rated R. So I think we have to be wise, and we have to really pay attention to the stories that are coming out of California.
Well said. Another thing your book speaks to is technology. As I know, something you and I have in common is that each of us is a father, and each of us has a smartphone. And you talk about smartphone as myth teller. How does technology shape our affections or impact our hearts and minds, Trevin?
I think that's the right way to ask that question, because a lot of people, I think, assume that what they're going to get on their phone, that the good or bad of it is basically a question of content, right? What am I accessing? What am I going to see here? Whereas I want to step back and say, no, actually, our very use of the technology itself, just the fact that we are constantly looking at our phones, that in itself is shaping us, regardless of whether or not what we're looking at is appropriate or inappropriate. It's the question of the fact that we are looking all the time at our phones that we should be considering. The big myth that the phone reinforces in our hearts and minds, I think, on a regular basis, is that we are the center of the universe. Everything about our phones is tailored to our own needs, to our own desires, to our wants, what we need to learn. It is all put together in that way. And so understanding that should give us a sense of a sense of pause and a sense of caution to say, hey, my phone is changing my life in ways that are not always God-honoring or God-glorifying. And that's if you don't ever access something bad on your phone, you know, like some pornographic website or so. I mean, that just the phone itself and what it reinforces about who we are and how we live can in itself be dangerous to our hearts. And so, I'm not saying you throw the phone out. I have a smartphone. You have a smartphone. I do think we need to be very careful about what we're, how this technology is being used in our families and with our children. And I write a little bit about that. Others have written even more extensively on that. So the question is not, well, am I going to throw out the smartphone? The question is, no, how am I going to be intentional to make sure that the smartphone is not forming me in ways that move me away from holiness and move me away from being the person that God has called me to be?
Well, Trevin, once again, I'm going to be kind of the geeky fan here, if it's okay, because I'm a big fan of your blog there on the Gospel Coalition, titled Kingdom People. And, you know, one thing I find about your blog, and by the way, listeners, if you're looking for a good, trendy, topical, blog that relates to a lot of issues of the day, Trevin, I believe, does an excellent job of that. Tell me about, just if you don't mind, how did you go about starting your blog, and give me your background and your history of how you got about starting blogging?
You know, back in October of 2006 is when I started blogging regularly, virtually every day. I started the blog during a season of particular disappointment when it came to ministry. I was in seminary. I had come back from the mission field, and unfortunately, for whatever reason, in many American churches, experience as missionary does not really count when it comes to church life and ministry. It's almost, I don't know why this is the case, but in many churches, missions experience is kind of treated like, oh, I guess you couldn't cut it over here, so I guess you went over there kind of a thing. And you really have to start over. And it was a discouraging time. And I was learning so much. I felt like God was teaching me so much that it was during that time that I said, you know, I love to write. I want to continue to write. Writing is a passion of mine. So I want to do this as much as I can, you know, publicly. I did not know when I started the blog that it would that the audience for it would really grow. I remember the first time that I, you know, about 60 people clicked on something that I'd written, and I thought, wow, that's like a small congregation of a church. You know, that's really amazing. And you know, just over the years, the readership just grew and grew, and so now I see it as one of my main outlets of ministry. And you know, I'm a teaching pastor at my church, so I preach and I teach a lot. But I also consider myself first and foremost a writer, and so the blog keeps that discipline of writing in front of me constantly. And my favorite thing to hear from someone is when they say, "Trevin, I was thinking this, but I didn't know how to put this into words, and you put this into words," you know? And it's just so gratifying because I feel like, oh, okay, if that's the way I can serve people, if I can take either, you know, maybe think something that gives someone else some clarity in their own mind, or if I can help them articulate what they think and that they, in a way that is, you know, grace-filled, that they'd want to share, then for me, that's the big reward from it, is that I realize that the Lord can use it in a number of different areas of life that we're called to speak into.
Well, and I've shared with you personally, I guess every Friday you have your entry is always titled Trevin 7, which is kind of catchy, and I want to ask you how that came about. But you know, that was, I don't know how many listeners will know this here in Oklahoma. This was when I was given the privilege to write a weekly blog. Yours was the inspiration. I do what's Doyle's Half Dozen, and it's marked after that. Tell me about Trevin 7. It's kind of understandable, but just, and what's the purpose of what you come up with for that?
Yep. So Trevin 7 started out, I mean, when I first started blogging, I had a feature about once a week called In the Blogosphere. And I would lay out, you know, 5 to 10 different links that I had found. And this is one of the things that I think is important in blogging. It's not just about what I write. It's about the good things that I found that I want to share with others, right? So I understand people are going to come to my blog, and there are people that tell me, you know, hey, I come to your blog once a week to see what it is you've written and if I'm interested in reading it. But Trevin 7, I always look through and decide what I'm going to read from there because I'm pointing to other people's work. And to me, that's still a compliment because they trust me to point them to good content. So it started as In the Blogosphere, and then a few years later, I had a daily feature of 2 or 3 links a day called Worth a Look, and Trevin 7 was the Friday edition of that, and it was basically the 7 links that I had found most helpful during the week. Eventually, I moved the Worth a Look more to Twitter rather than to the blog itself, and Trevin 7, though, remained, and so I continued to pull that out. And it's basically, I take the articles that I've come across, and I try to have some variety in there so it's not all the same kind of article. But some of it will be news, some of it will be commentary, sometimes it will be a lengthy essay, sometimes it will be a video. It just, you never know. But the things that I found most intriguing, helpful, insightful for ministry and for just understanding our culture, those are the things that I like to put in that list. And let there be an eclectic collection of links. Because, I mean, you know, Chris, there's just so many. We were bombarded with information. And so I want to be a good creator of content, you know, a good writer, but I also want to be a good curator of content, you know, someone who when I come across something helpful, that I share that well, and so that others are can benefit from it too.
Well, Trevin, thanks again. Like I said, this is a privilege for me. You encourage me in my blogging adventures, and I do enjoy reading, and I encourage our listeners to check out your blog there on the Gospel Coalition, and all of your works I think are just excellent.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you guys.
Excellent. And I do want to ask just one more question as we close. And of course, Trevin, you serve in an important role among Southern Baptists with your role as Lifeway, your new book, your blog. It's just incredible. How can we pray for you? How can the people of Oklahoma, how can Oklahoma Baptists pray for you as you serve?
Well, I would ask that you continue to, that you pray that I serve well with the different responsibilities that I've been given. Pray also, I would say, for my family. I write about my family members in Romania. My mother-in-law, who I write about in the book, is very, very sick currently, and so my wife has gone back to Romania to be with her for the last several weeks. And so we're juggling sort of that time of separation we've never really experienced before, and me as a single dad, basically, right now, while she's the primary giver for her mother, and she's very, very ill, and so any prayers in that regard would be well appreciated for our family.
Absolutely. We'll be faithful to remember you in that. Been talking to Trevin Wax, who's author, pastor, Bible publisher. Follow him on Twitter at Trevin Wax, and use the social media hashtag ThisIsOurTime to find out about his book, and would encourage everyone listening to this to check out the Christian Standard Bible as well. Trevin, thanks once again for joining Chris and me in this podcast.
Thank you very much.
Blessings to you.
You have been listening to Messenger Insight, brought to you by the Cooperative Program and the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma. For more, find us in the iTunes Store or visit us at BaptistMessenger.com.